WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, traffic, Justin Ellick, sports, and now.
Talking the news with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yep, that is me. Good morning. It is Wednesday, March 20th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Mix of sun and clouds this morning. Could see some afternoon showers. The high 56. Tonight and overnight, the clouds clear out, low 31, and then Thursday, sunshine, a whole lot cooler though, high 44. If you're walking out the door with us right now, it is 36 and partly cloudy in Rybrook up in Westchester, 35 and partly cloudy in Sayreville down in New Jersey, and it is 41 and overcast outside our Midtown studios. We got a lot to get to as we work our way up, 6 o'clock hour, Sid and friends in the morning. March Madness got underway. We're doing our own bracket here at WABC Radio.com, but March Madness got underway for us locally last night. It was the play-in game. Wagner College, which is out on Staten Island, actually won its first ever NCAA tournament game last night. They earned a spot. They beat Howard University. It's the first March Madness win in school history. Now, of course, it had to come while Wagner students were on spring break, but the ones that were local, they got together to watch the game last night.
It's a huge accomplishment for them. Oh my God, my heart rate was like up and down, up and down, up and down, watching the last 5 minutes of the game.
No, they had it. They had it.
Yeah, it was a really good game last night if you watched it. A 71-68 victory for the Seahawks. So now they are in the 64-team bracket going into the first round. They're going to play North Carolina, which would be, they would be the 16 seed, North Carolina, the number one seed, but fans feeling confident.
I feel like it's putting Wagner on the map.
They worked really hard for it, and they earned their spot.
Yeah, so Wagner's this tiny college. Just to tell you how small they are, they actually are only fielding 7 players for this tournament because their bench isn't a whole lot deeper and some players are hurt. So there are only 7 players that went out to this game apparently last night. So the win means they advance to face number one seed North Carolina on Thursday. Fans are hoping for a Cinderella story. We have seen 16 seeds knocked off before. And because St. John's and Seton Hall didn't make it into the NCAA tourney, our hopes are all pinned on Wagner and the St. Peter's Peacocks, who surprised us a couple years ago by making it to the Elite Eight. So they left for the March Madness, hoping for another Cinderella story. You'll remember they beat number one Kentucky in the opening round 2 years ago. They have a new head coach and, of course, a bunch of new players who are feeling pretty confident that they can win come tomorrow.
Listen, this is Peacock Nation. This is our time of the year. There's definitely a buzz, an energy around us. I know my guys are excited, so we'll be ready to play.
Yeah, so the team had a big send-off yesterday from Jersey City. That's where the St. Peter's Peacocks play. The gym they play in looks no bigger than a high school gym. It's a tiny college. The team takes on number 2 Tennessee in the first round of the tournament on Thursday. And, of course, it is the 77 WABC ABC Big Basketball Bracket Challenge. UConn, Houston, Purdue, North Carolina, who will be this year's tournament champ? It's your chance to weigh in. Registration is now open. It's free. Go to WABCradio.com/bracket to sign up for your chance to win $500. For contest rules, you can also go over to WABCradio.com/bracket. We're pretty excited about that tournament and those brackets that are up at WABCradio.com. There were primary elections last night, but a lot of people saying ho-hum because already the president, President Biden, former President Donald Trump, have enough delegates going into the summer conventions. So the president was talking about the primary yesterday. Florida had one, 4 other states.
We have a lot of cash and we have a great company, but they want to take it away or at least take the cash element away. Billions of dollars in value, billions of dollars in properties. But they'd like to take the cash away so I can't use it on the campaign.
So Trump was asked about the primaries, but he was talking about trying to post bond on his New York civil fraud case after he voted in Florida's primary yesterday. The primaries were in Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, and Ohio. Now, one of the Trump-backed candidates, Senate candidate Bernie Moreno, is the projected winner of the GOP nomination for Senate in Ohio.
And I want to thank President Trump for all he did for me, for this campaign, for his unwavering support, for his love of this country.
Moreno had built up the strong platform thanks to endorsements from former President Trump, as well as Ohio's other senator, J.D. Vance, and Congressman Jim Jordan. He'll now face incumbent Senator Sherrod Brown in November. The president, former president Donald Trump, did you hear him? He was on with Sid on Sid and Friends in the Morning yesterday. There he was also talking about this judgment that he's having a hard time coming up with money for here in New York. This is what he told Sid yesterday.
Well, these are crooked politicians, a corrupt court, and it's a disgrace, and they don't even give you a chance to appeal. They want you to put up money before the appeal. So if you sell a property or do something, and then you win the appeal, you don't have the property. What was that all about?
So this was the court case, because there's a number of them, that was brought on by the Attorney General, State Attorney General Letitia James, here in New York. And the president, former president, said that he was upset this was all happening in New York, a place that he says he felt he had a lot to do with the rebirth and the rebuilding of it from the 80s going forward.
I built a large portion of that city, the West Side Yards, the convention center. I was involved in so many things. And then this is the kind of treatment I get. It's pretty unbelievable.
And then if he saves some time to talk about the judge in this case, who says he not treated him very fairly.
And this judge is wacko judge who hates Trump. And he's, he's been overturned more than, I guess, just on this case, he's been overturned four times. He comes up with a thing to pay $355 million plus interest, plus this, plus that, on something that there was no problem. There's no fine. There should be fine. No fine.
Sid had a lot to say, and so did the former president, about abortion, the war in Gaza, and, of course, the upcoming election in November. You can hear the entire interview. Surf on over to WABCRadio.com. WABC News Time 509. It was a day in court for a man charged with brutally attacking an MTA worker in the Bronx back in 2022. Unfortunately, these attacks coming way too often. MTA Chair CEO Jan Oliber, he was among those people who showed up in court yesterday to support the station cleaner, Anthony Nelson, who was left with a broken nose, a collarbone in this attack that took place at the Pelham Bay Park station back in August of 2022.
Attacks on MTA workers have to be treated with the utmost seriousness. That means real penalties. It means dealing with recidivism. It means people can't come back into the system and attack MTA workers again and again.
So this creep, Alexander Wright, could get up to 7 years if convicted of assault and is due back in court on May 2nd. Of course, you question why it's taking so long to get this done. This guy probably should be behind bars.
Just working towards a recovery, doing the best I can, physical therapy, the assistance of my family.
Yeah, that's Anthony Nelson. Transit Workers Union head Robert Kelly says they're determined to prosecute Alexander Wright to the fullest extent of the law.
You put your hands on our workers, we're coming after you. And we're not going to settle for anything. We're coming. We want to prosecute to the full extent of the law.
There was a time when those attacks seemed shocking on MTA workers. Unfortunately, they've become all too common. Just 2 weeks ago, that conductor slashed across the neck as he leaned his head out of a station in Brooklyn. Thank God he's alive to tell his story. A survey finds a lot more New Yorkers are not happy with the quality of life in New York City compared to a few years prior to the start of the pandemic. Mayor Adams responding to the survey that was in the New York Times yesterday.
Cycle through COVID. A whole lot of folks were angry through COVID. Cycle through 184,000 migrants and asylum seekers. A whole lot of folks were concerned about that.
This organization, the Citizens Budget Commission, they polled New Yorkers in the second half of last year and found 30% rate the city's quality of life as excellent or good, just 30%. That's about a 21% drop compared to the same survey in 2017 when Mayor Bill de Blasio was in charge at City Hall.
The 2023 resident survey confirms that the Adams administration is on the right track with a focus on public safety, housing, rat mitigation, and mental health services.
That might sound some like spin from the mayor. The survey shows in most categories like public safety, education, New Yorkers don't feel as good about the city as they did back in 2017, pre-pandemic. The head of the FAA, says Boeing must shift its focus to improving safety standards. In an interview with NBC, FAA Administrator Michael Whitaker says Boeing's safety protocols are not what would be expected if safety is their first priority.
There are issues around the safety culture in Boeing, that their priorities have been on production and not on safety and quality.
Misso's comments come after the FAA conducted an audit of Boeing. The audit took place after that door plug on a Boeing 737 MAX 9 airplane operated by Alaska Airlines just blew out while in midair.
Whenever someone comes into the FAA to brief on their company, the first thing I expect is to talk about safety, because we all have to start there. If it's not safe, then the whole system is not working the way it should.
A number of other incidents involving Boeing aircraft have happened in recent weeks, including a tire falling off after takeoff. 512, let's go down to Washington. One of the nation's top former military officers blasting the Biden administration's withdrawal of Afghanistan. Former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, testifying before Congress that the August 2021 withdrawal was way too quick.
On 14 August, the non-combatant evacuation operation decision was made by the Department of State. It is my assessment that decision came too late.
The withdrawal, criticized by Republicans and some Democrats as a strategic failure. There is some dispute as to whether President Biden was informed by his generals that a quick withdrawal would lead to chaos and an immediate Taliban takeover of the country.
In the final days, we gave 130,000 people their lives and freedom at very high cost. And most importantly, we protected the United States from terrorist attack from Afghanistan, which was our original mission. And that mission continues today.
13 U.S. service members died during an attack while the U.S. was withdrawing. Milley and former U.S. Central Command and Department of Defense Commander, retired General Kenneth McKenzie, been testifying over the last 24
Having
hours.
Having a plan is one thing. Preparing the plan, vetting the plan, coordinating the plan, that's another set of tasks completely.
And that was too little, too late.
It was my judgment that it was far too little, far too late.
Was that your assessment, General Milley?
It was.
Yeah, the 13 service members, the Americans, were killed in a terror attack at the Kabul airport back in 2021. 514, let's go overseas. Negotiations to reach a temporary ceasefire in the war between Israel and Hamas continue. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says the administration working to strike a deal to release hostages held by Hamas and surge humanitarian aid into Gaza.
We are doing working 24/7, leaning in and trying to make sure that we get that the hostages so that we have a temporary ceasefire so that we can get that all important aid into Gaza.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken going to visit Saudi Arabia and Egypt this week. This comes as a new UN report warns famine is set to break out in northern Gaza.
We understand what the crisis that's going on in Gaza. We see it, and we want to do everything that we can to get that aid in.
In a moment, we'll take a look at what's going on in Ukraine and the American response there. But first, 515, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Wednesday. Good morning, Justin Ellick.
Good morning to you. Noam laid it. What is it? Hump Day. Happy Hump Day.
That it is. Yeah.
Yes. Start on the ice here at the Garden. The Rangers got doubled up by the Winnipeg Jets. Final score 4-2. Alexander Wenberg and Alexis Lafreniere scored for the first place Rangers, I should say, who lost for the second time in seven games. New York continues to be without captain Jacob Trouba, who missed his seventh straight game with a lower body injury. The Rangers are 24-9-0 at home and lead the second-place Carolina Hurricanes by 2 points in the Metropolitan Division. In Elmont, the Islanders fared just about the same against the visiting Carolina Hurricanes, falling 4-1 last night. Kyle Palmieri scored for New York. Ilya Sorokin finished with 31 saves for the Isles, who lost their fifth straight, but outscored 20-6 during the stretch. The Islanders remain on the outside of the Eastern Conference playoff picture, with hopes of reaching the postseason dwindling with each loss. Finally, the Devils were able to salvage a local win on the ice last night, beating the Pittsburgh Penguins 5-2 at home. In Newark, Jake Allen made 36 saves, and Timo Meier and Dawson Mercer each scored twice to lead the Devs to victory. Alexander Holtz also scored as New Jersey won for the third time in eight games under interim coach Travis Green. First four action got underway last night in the NCAA men's basketball tournament, giving us a taste of what's to come tomorrow when round one opens up. Our local heroes at Wagner edged out the 71-68 win over Howard in their play-in game, while Colorado State advanced into the 64-team field with their 67-42 romp of UVA. Tonight, the two remaining first four contests are 16 seeds Grambling and Montana State. Montana State, 3.5-point favorites there, tipping off at 6:40 p.m. before 10 seeds Colorado. And Boise State get after it at 9-10 Colorado in that one, 2.5-point favorites. In the NBA, the Nets lost at home to the visiting New Orleans Pelicans. Final score 104-91. Cam Thomas had 25 points, and Mikal Bridges added 15 for the Nets, who have lost four straight. And finally, we'll head to the Diamond for a regular season Major League Baseball game today, albeit very, very far away in Seoul, Korea, where the Dodgers and Padres will meet for a 6:05 p.m. first pitch to kick off the MLB World Tour Seoul Series. They've been out there for about a half a week now, playing with Team Korea and one of the professional Korea KBL teams over there. A couple of exhibition games. Now they go head-to-head for, I guess, technically, opening day.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, not technically. Opening day is more of an American, pastime. But, yeah, I mean, this is the first game that counts of the Major League Baseball season. Yeah.
Has that ever happened before? They start the season overseas somewhere?
That's a really, really good question.
It's weird.
Yeah. It's interesting. Well, it's the weirder thing is that the rest of the Major Leagues are still playing spring training baseball.
Games, yeah. So the season doesn't open for everybody else till April, right?
Well, no. The Yankees open, I think, March 28th.
Oh.
Yeah. Right. Next Wednesday or Thursday, I believe. So that is when, right before April, if you will. No, that's your sports. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 519. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says he's optimistic Congress will approve more aid for Ukraine. Austin says he continues to see broad support in both chambers of Congress for Ukraine.
And we'll continue to work closely with Congress and our international partners to ensure that Ukraine receives the support it needs.
But Austin's warning that Russia is making incremental progress in its invasion of Ukraine as Ukrainian forces are running low on munitions.
The United States is not doing this alone. As you witnessed today, again, some 50 countries gathered for the 20th time to address security assistance for Ukraine.
Yeah, so apparently Ukrainian leadership, according to Austin, is staying positive. They think they can still win this war.
They feel confident in their ability to continue to defend their sovereign territory and hold the line.
Now the White House Senate leaders have called on Speaker Mike Johnson to put a foreign aid package that cleared the Senate on the House floor for a vote. Cubans have been protesting the lack of power and food as inflation just soars over 30% on the island nation. Cuba's leaders blaming the shortages on U.S. sanctions, but critics blame Cuban regime in the firing of its economic advisor for the problems.
The economy is worse today than it was 3 years ago. So what is the Cuban government doing to correct this? Absolutely nothing.
That's Dr. Andy Gomez. He's at the University of Miami. He says the Cuban government just bought millions of dollars worth of food, questioning where it went.
Lack of food, lack of milk, just basic necessities. When I speak to people on the island, they tell me this is as bad as they have seen it. And they don't see a solution. I don't see a solution.
Now, the U.S. has maintained this economic embargo against Cuba since 1960. But again, as you heard from Dr. Gomez there, things haven't been as bad as this in a while.
And the problem is not the embargo. They just bought a bunch of food not too long ago, millions of dollars worth of food. The question is, where's that food going to?
522, let's go down to Washington. House Republicans introducing a bill that would end federal funding for medical schools with DEI race-based mandates. Congressman Greg Murphy of North Carolina was a combat surgeon in Iraq, and he co-wrote this measure that requires medical schools to uphold colorblind admissions processes.
I come here today as a surgeon, someone who has devoted his entire life, both here as well as abroad, in taking care of patients of a large minority of individuals who do not look like me. Prescription pads and scalpels are now being weaponized.
The lawmakers claim diversity, equity, inclusion practices have no place in medicine, and in their words, sacrifice the excellence and quality of medical education at the hands of prejudice and divisive ideology. This has been very confusing, what's going on in Texas. To enforce this new law giving local police the power to arrest anybody they believe is in the country illegally. Now, it looked like yesterday Texas had won this battle to arrest people they thought were in the country illegally. And here was the governor, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, talking about this yesterday.
I'm catching my breath right now because this is historic. The Supreme Court has ruled that would give Texas the right to arrest those who are here illegally. We can put them in jail.
And then you had these immigrant groups who were just outraged by this decision.
We know what this will mean for many of our community members in Texas, and not just migrants, but all of our communities of color.
Now, fast forward to late last night, a federal appeals court putting that controversial Texas immigration law back on hold. Late Tuesday night, a three-judge panel at the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals voted 2-1 against an earlier ruling from another panel that put the law that would allow local police to arrest anyone they suspect of crossing the border illegally. Arguments are set to be heard today on Texas's request to put the law back to into effect. So just a confusing time in Texas. Down to Florida at 5:24. Spring break. You know, maybe you've been following the story in Miami. They really wanted to keep the spring breakers away because they've caused chaos in the last couple of years. Lots of damage, lots of arrests. They have not done a great job at keeping those spring breakers away. The college students, some 250 arrests as of Monday. I'm sure that number has gone up a bit. And then you have the spring break warning from Florida's attorney general, who stopped by Daytona Beach, which may be the world's most famous spring break beach, to warn about the fact that every year they have spring breakers who die from drug overdoses.
We lead the nation for those who overdose while on vacation. And that is a stat that we want to change.
That's Ashley Moody, who says deadly levels of fentanyl are turning up in various narcotics. She promoted a program that provides free access to these anti-opioid overdose medications that are out in the market.
Many equate spring break with drug use, and we have got to stop that because we now know that so many illicit substances contain a lethal dose of fentanyl. We want this to be a positive experience. So many of us have such fond memories and pleasant experiences from our younger days, but we don't want what is intended to be a memorable experience to be tragic.
And she warns that there probably will be some of those tragedies before the spring break season is over. There's an all-out alert for measles now, not just in Florida where there was problems before, but all across the country.
It's a highly contagious virus. It also spreads airborne, which means it can travel long distances. So if somebody with measles walks into a room of 100 people who are not immune, 90 of those 100 people will get measles.
Sort of hard to believe that it is back, measles. Dr. Edmund Milder there from Rady's Children's Hospital, he says the CDC so far this year, there have 58 cases in 17 states. That already equals the number of cases reported in all of 2023.
The danger is that when a lot of people get it, the rates are that about 1 out of 1,000 infections will lead to inflammation of the brain, encephalitis, which can have permanent effects, and about 1 in 1,000 can die.
Yeah, it's amazing. It was once eradicated. Measles, highly contagious. It is potentially deadly. This mom worried about other kids not getting the measles shot.
Everybody's parents is different. Some parents worry about, you know, the after effects of a vaccination. I worry about my daughter getting something and then dying from it or not recovering correctly.
Yeah, so if you get that shot, you're probably protected. As scammers get more and more skilled with the latest technology advancements, seniors seem to be getting duped more and more. So yesterday, this group in the Bronx was sat down with senior citizens to warn them about how they could be scammed online. This senior who showed up at the seminar says she knows somebody that was almost scammed out of a lot of money.
And one of my girlfriends received a call, and he said, "Grandma, da-da-da-da-da-da," and she listened to everything she said. She said, "Son, I feel sorry for you, but I have no grandchildren." So that was the end of that conversation.
Yes, okay, that one ended well. The FBI's Internet Compliance Center seniors in 2022, they made over 80,000 complaints of fraud, amounting to $3.1 billion lost, all kinds of scams. So they have these people from City Hall and private organizations talking to seniors all over the city on how to protect themselves.
Always reach back out. Contact that organization directly. Whether it's, "I've got to go," and then you call the bank, you know, and check your account or anything like that, or write the organization at their official site.
Yeah, essentially saying anytime someone reached out to you online, you should double check before you engage in any kind of business with them. The opening bell, it rings this morning after stocks closed higher yesterday. Wall Street at closing, the Dow gained 320 points. S&P 500 grew by 29. The NASDAQ gained 63 points. The Fed is due to deliver its decision on interest rates. The Federal Reserve's two-day policy meeting wraps up today with a highly anticipated announcement followed by a press conference from the Fed chair, Jerome Powell. The Fed is widely expected to leave those rates unchanged.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
That is me, 534. Good morning. It is Wednesday, March 20th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sun clouds this morning. Could see some showers this afternoon, the high 56. Tonight and overnight, those clouds clear out, low 31, and then Thursday sunshine, but a whole lot cooler, the high only 44. If you're walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are, 36, partly cloudy in Rybrook up in Westchester, 35, partly cloudy in Sayreville down in New Jersey, and it is 41 and cloudy right outside our Midtown studios. We'll start this half hour right here in the city where Mayor Adams yesterday, during his one day a week where he takes questions from the press, he does a Q&A every single Tuesday from City Hall where reporters are allowed to ask the mayor questions. So one of the big questions he was asked yesterday was about these sex assault allegations against him that date back a couple of decades.
This did not happen. It did not happen. I don't recall ever meeting this person during my time in the police department.
So this woman filed a lawsuit claiming Adams demanded oral sex in exchange for helping her with a job issue when the two worked for the city's transit bureau back in 1993. That's how far it goes back. The accuser claims he forced her hand onto his private parts. Adams says he's been a public face for 40 years in the city, has always carried himself with dignity, and his legacy will be a good one. And he says none of this is true.
I have been one of the most public faces in the city, and I have always carried myself with the level of dignity that New Yorkers expect from me. And I want to say to New Yorkers, I'm going to continue to do my job.
He continued to go on, and he went on to say that the sex assault allegations are just not true.
I'm sorry that Tracy and Jordan, my family, is going through this right now. But I have been very clear on fighting on the rights of behalf of women, and I'm going to continue to do that.
It is interesting to hear from regular, everyday New Yorkers about what they think about this, whether they think there's any truth to it all.
Everybody's got skeletons in their closet, you know. I got skeletons, you know. I'm sure you have some. You know, but, you know, I mean, when you're in public office, everything comes out.
With all that, yes, I think it's going to distract them. I definitely think it's going to distract them. How could it not? It would distract anybody. Come on.
It better not be distracted. He needs to just do what he has to do to improve the city.
Yeah, so some New Yorkers saying no, they don't think there's anything to it. Others say they just wouldn't be surprised by anything anymore. WABC News Time 539. What is one rule I've always given you as the one thing you want to take away from the News Hour since I started doing this show so many years ago? It is never, if you can, to go under scaffolding. We don't report many of these incidents, but every single day there's some, I think, well, maybe every single day might be an exaggeration, but almost every single day would not be an exaggeration. There is some accident involving scaffolding. So if you are on a street and you see like an entire block of scaffolding ahead of you, I would cross the street. So here's a prime example. Two workers hurt yesterday. Partial collapse of scaffolding outside a Brooklyn building. This was in Bed-Stuy. There's now a gap in the scaffolding surrounding the building because a portion of the roof caved in. It was compromised when this 20-foot section just fell onto the workers there. The FDNY showing up. Thankfully, these workers not hurt too bad.
We had two workers working on a scaffolding and the parapet collapsed on top of them. They lifted up the debris and they pulled them out.
Yeah, so they were trapped under this debris for about 15 to 20 minutes. They are expected to survive, taken to Kings County Hospital in serious condition. There were a fair amount of eyewitnesses to when this collapse took place, middle of the day.
Just a very loud bang, I guess. I don't know. The floor shook a little bit. It sounded like a huge bundle of bricks hitting
hitting wood.
Yeah, so thankfully no pedestrians on the street were injured. The collapse appears to have been contained to the upper floors of this scaffolding, but that's not always the case. The rent is actually going down in portions of the city. This new report out from StreetEasy says the median rent in Manhattan for February of this year, 2024, fell almost 5% when compared to the same time last year. Five neighborhoods in particular fueled the dip. So the numbers down rent-wise, big time, in places like Battery Park City, down 12%. In the Village, surprising, down 7%. Lower East Side, 5%. Upper West Side, almost 5%. Only neighborhoods that had at least 50 rental listings on StreetEasy were considered in this survey. The rents are still, you know, way too high. So the average rent is over $4,000 a month in Manhattan. But there's other neighborhoods where it's actually becoming a lot more expensive. Let's look at Queens, where the median asking rent jumped 13% from the same time last year. 13%. That's huge. Up in the Bronx, the numbers are up as well.
It's hard to live here. We were looking at some apartment buildings that were going up on 3rd Avenue Bridge in the Bronx. And for a three-bedroom, two-bathroom, it was $5,900.
Wow.
That seems pretty absurd.
Can you imagine $5,900? StreetEasy predicted landlords could start raising rents amid tougher competition for apartments. The issue, too, is just not enough inventory in some big neighborhoods. Queens, though, is the one that's getting squeezed the most in the StreetEasy survey. Neighborhoods like Long Island City, Astoria, Sunnyside, the rent up 8.3%. People now going out to look for more affordable units further out into Queens. That's where apparently the deals still can be found, in places like Elmhurst, Jackson Heights, and Woodside. We talked to one real estate appraiser who says, this is just part of living the city. The rent goes up, the rent goes back down, it goes back up
prices
again.
Prices are no longer rising like a rocket ship. We essentially peaked in the summer. This has been a centuries-old challenge in New York.
So the deals to be had in Manhattan, there are, do you remember during the pandemic, the rentals went up? In other words, the prices went down. There were so many available rentals because people moved out of the city. They were offering these deals. You get 12 months and 1 month free. Those deals in some parts of Manhattan are back. So if you're somebody looking to score a deal in Manhattan, now's the time apparently to look for one before the numbers go back up again, because no doubt they will. Yesterday, we were telling you about this story in Brooklyn where cops raced to take down this gunman who was chasing after two people who he was firing his gun at him. This 20-year-old, his name is Nathan Scott. So now we come to find out that there is more to the story. So police were called to the scene because they saw this man running down the street in Brooklyn, shooting at two people. Well, now we find out that apparently these two people that Nathan Scott was chasing had just tried to rob him. And apparently he had a gun, and that's why he was racing after him. Well, police, of course, didn't know that when they showed up at the scene. They just saw somebody racing down the street with a gun, and they took 20-year-old Nathan Scott out. He had no previous record. The two people who he was chasing, one of them, identified as Jeremiah Adams, was wanted for a mugging of a 17-year-old of a cell phone last month. Neighbors say it's all kind of tragic.
Someone comes out and starts talking to the gentleman, and he said, they just robbed me. They know me, and they robbed me. Why would they rob me? They know me. His word for word is what he said.
The officer just found an innocent bystander. Also, of course, the 60-year-old man shot in the abdomen while he was just working on the side of the street. Not clear if the bullets that hit him were from the 20-year-old or from the cops who were shooting at the 20-year-old. All right, 5:45. Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk where we find Justin Allen.
Thank you, Noam Lennon. Just had to get the phlegm out of my throat. Sorry about that. Get a quick swallow in as well. I was running down the hallway.
Oh, yeah. That's what you want.
Flumblock. Starting on the ice at the Garden, the Rangers got doubled up by the Winnipeg Jets. Final score 4-2. Alexander Wenberg and Alexis Lafreniere scored for the first-place Rangers, who lost for the second time in 7 games. New York continues to be without captain Jacob Trouba, who missed his 7th straight game with a lower body injury. The Rangers are 24-9-0 at home and lead the second-place Carolina Hurricanes by 2 points in the Metropolitan Division. In Elmont, the Islanders fared just about the same against the visiting Carolina Hurricanes, falling 4-1 last night. Kyle Palmieri scored for New York. Ilya Sorokin finished with 31 saves for the Islanders, who lost their fifth straight and have been outscored 20-6 during the stretch. The Islanders remain on the outside of the Eastern Conference playoff picture with hopes of reaching the postseason dwindling with each of these losses here. Finally, the Devils were able to salvage a local win on the ice last night, beating the Pittsburgh Penguins 5-2 at home in Newark. Jake Allen made 36 saves, and Timo Meier and Dawson Mercer each scored twice to lead the Devs to victory. Alexander Holtz also scored as New Jersey won for the third time in 8 games under interim coach Travis Green. First four action got underway last night in the NCAA men's basketball tournament, giving us a taste what's to come tomorrow when round one opens up. Our local heroes at Wagner College edged out the 71-68 win over Howard in their play-in game, while Colorado State advanced into the 64-team field with their 67-42 romp of UVA. Tonight, the remaining two first four contests are 16 seeds Grambling and Montana State. Montana State, their 3.5-point favorites, tipping off at 6:40 p.m. before 10 seeds Colorado, 2.5-point favorites, against Boise State. That tip is 9:10 p.m. tonight. In the NBA, the Nets lost at home to the visiting New Orleans Pelicans. Final score, 104-91. Cam Thomas with 25 and Mikal Bridges with 15. The Nets have lost 4 straight. Finally, we'll head to the Diamond for a regular season Major League Baseball game today, albeit on the other side of the world, very far away in Seoul, Korea, where the Dodgers and Padres will meet for a 6:05 p.m. first pitch to kick off the MLB World Tour Seoul Series. It is the first game that counts in your 2024 Major League Baseball season. That's your Sports Gnome, and I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Let's catch you up on some of the big stories of the morning. Some of it college basketball oriented. March Madness got underway last night with one local team, Wagner College, earning a spot in the big dance after winning a play-in game. They beat Howard University last night. It's the first March Madness win in Wagner's history. Now, they're on Staten Island, if you're not familiar with the small school.
It's a huge accomplishment for them. Oh my God, my heart rate was like up and down, up and down, up and down, watching it the last 5 minutes of the game.
They had it.
Yeah, lots of fans gathering at the school to watch the 71-68 victory that the Seahawks had. So they're now in the 64-team bracket going into the first round of the NCAA tournament. They're going to take on North Carolina, which won't be easy. So there's 16 seed North Carolina number one, but we've seen some upsets of 16 seeds in recent years.
I feel like it's putting Wagner on the map.
They worked really hard for it, and they earned their spot.
Yeah, so fans hoping for a Cinderella story there. Same for the St. Peter's Peacocks. These are, by the way, the only two local teams that we have in the tourney. I mean, I don't think you can count UConn. They're like 2.5 hours away. So St. Peter's Peacocks, of course, from Jersey City. You remember they had that amazing run a couple years back, beat number one Kentucky when they were the 16 seed in the opening round. They're hoping they can have something like that happen again this year. They left from Jersey City yesterday, getting ready for their game.
Listen, this is Peacock Nation. This is our time of the year. There's definitely a buzz, an energy around us. I know my guys are excited, so we'll be ready to play.
And just like Wagner, St. Peter's.
Well, stop it.
Wait, they beat Kentucky. They got They got to the Elite Eight,
nobody
the St. Peter's
cares.
How could nobody care?
Let me remind
in
you.
In Jersey City, they care.
Let me remind you.
Right.
It should be a great story. You're right. Jersey City and all that local stuff.
It was a great story. When
no,
it
was not a great story.
Why wasn't it a great story?
Because you're missing the most important part.
What is that?
When they won, and I guess they came to practice the next day, or they took pictures. What T-shirts were all these kids wearing?
I don't know. What were they wearing? I don't remember anymore.
BLM.
Oh, really?
So now the St. Peter's story, when these kids are wearing BLM T-shirts, isn't as romantic as you just made it out to sound, is it, Noam?
Well, it's still kind of romantic.
No. You wear a BLM shirt, you're a traitor. It's like a Jew voting for a Democrat.
Right,
you wear a BLM shirt, you're a traitor. That was the St. Peter's basketball team. So calm down the celebration for just a moment.
All right. Well, can I root for them now? They're taking on number 2 Tennessee, first round of the tournament
tomorrow.
I don't care
who they're taking on. They're wearing BLM shirts.
Well, we don't know if this team is. This is a different team. It's a couple years later.
It's the same university. They are contaminated. So, no, I'm rooting for
Tennessee.
So
I have to pin my hopes on Wagner now? Wagner's the only local school I can root for? Are they wearing BLM T-shirts over at Wagner in Staten Island?
You may want to check. No, not Staten Island. Don't have to worry about Staten Island.
Okay.
That is a Republican stronghold. Right? Staten Island is one of the maybe the best borough in this state.
It's the only Republican stronghold in the city.
So Wagner, fine. St. Peter's, caution.
Okay.
At your own risk.
Jeez, so I can't root for them, even though they're my hometown team.
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm going to put them in at the 77 WABC Big Basketball Bracket Challenge. UConn, Houston, Purdue, North Carolina, who will be this year's tournament champ. Registration is now open. It's free. Go to WABCradio.com/bracket to sign up now for your chance to win $500. For contest rules, go to WABCradio.com/bracket, and you can see Sydney's bracket, and I think he has St. Peter's going all the way.
No, I don't. I actually do have a dark horse team.
Oh, who's that?
Well, it's not really. Well, they're an 8 seed, which is a pretty low seed in the East, but it's based upon their success last year. They brought back 7 or 8 players from the same team that went to the Final Four last year, and it's on Glades Road in Boca Raton.
Oh, FAU?
FAU Owls, that's right.
All right.
That's a very tough. The East is very tough. UConn is number one overall. They're the top seed in the East. It's a very tough bracket. You got San Diego State. You've got Iowa State. But watch out once again for Boca Raton's FAU Owls.
But they don't come from a very competitive league, the FAU.
No, they don't.
I mean, they have to play Temple to win
the championship. But here's the difference. All these schools with these great, great, history, they get these McDonald's All-Americans, and they're gone after 1 year. So they develop no chemistry. There's no synergy. FAU, these kids basically came off the basketball court in Deerfield. So they stick together for 4 years. And in basketball, that chemistry means a lot.
It does.
So that's why these smaller schools tend to be good in basketball, because they play together for 3 or 4 years, unlike the big schools where the major superstars are gone after 1 year. That makes sense?
It does. Well, college basketball is not what it once was. So
correct, yes. No. Well, nothing is, by the way.
No. Just life in general. It's not
right,
like it once was.
Except for your show. Your show is great.
Oh, thank you very much.
And Kerr and Howard Stern together yesterday. You love that.
Yes, that was a great interview. You're going to play pieces of that today?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are, Noam.
Jim Kerr. Yeah, it was a great interview. There were primaries last night. Not that they really mattered anymore, because President Biden, former President Donald Trump have enough delegates going into the summer convention. Trump's backed Senate candidate in Ohio, Bernie Moreno. He is the winner of the GOP nomination for Senate in Ohio.
And I want to thank President Trump for all he did for me, for this campaign, for his unwavering support, for his love of this country.
Moreno got a lot of support from locals, including Senator J.D. Vance, who's the other senator, Congressman Jim Jordan, of course, from Ohio, who now face incumbent Senator Sherrod Brown in November. Speaking of Donald Trump, by the way, did you hear Sid's interview on Sid and Friends in the Morning yesterday with the former president? Surf on over. It's right there, the front page, WABCradio.com. You can hear the entire interview. They talk about the race for the White House, talk about his stance on abortion and the war in Gaza. NYPD cops investigating a deadly shooting that claimed the life of a 19-year-old in Canarsie. Gunfire erupting about 3 a.m. Tuesday as the victim, identified as Christian Montrose, was right in front of his home. He was shot in the head and in the mouth.
The last thing he said to me, "Mommy, did I hug you today?" I said, "Yes, you did. You hug me all the time. He's a hug everybody. If he don't know you, he will hug you."
Yeah, just 19 years old. That's his mother. So this four-door black sedan was seen driving off after the shooting. It sure looked like a targeted shooting. He has a twin sister. They were about to turn 20 years old.
He was my best friend. He was my other half. I love him. I still love him with all my heart.
Yeah, NYPD cops not saying a whole lot of what took place there. So far, they have not made any arrests. And let's end on a high note. This woman in Mount Vernon. I love when people do this, because I don't have the ability to do this. She decided that there's just too many hungry people in Mount Vernon, homeless people who aren't getting food, or people who have homes but don't have the money for food. So she bought a food truck. She hired this well-known chef. And she's going to drive around Mount Vernon feeding people.
Monday through Friday, most youth can count on meals, you know, from school, but as far as breakfast and lunch. But when it comes to meals on the weekends, you know, resources are thin.
So that's Sabrina Powell. She is starting this food truck. Well, she'll go to the people instead of the people having to come to her. She's getting donations. She's all set this up on her own from local churches and businesses. She hired this guy, David Gladman. He's a retired professional chef. He's worked at all these famous places.
I was the executive sous chef at the United Nations. I worked as the chef at ABC Television. I was the chef at Ogilvy & Mather, Skadden Arps Law Firm, the Mount Vernon High School City District. United Hebrew Nursing Home. Yeah. So I have a wealth of experience.
That's a pretty solid resume. I'd want to eat his meal. So the nonprofit has established a GoFundMe with money to purchase the needed equipment and supplies. And so now they're going to go out and donate food to the homeless and hungry families who don't have the money for food.
I'm looking forward to coming here and making some nice meals to pass around to people in Mount Vernon, because I have witnessed myself the homeless problem here in Mount Vernon. They're at the train station. They're at the bus stop. They're at various parks. And these people are hungry and they need something to eat.
Yeah, great job done by David Gladman and Sabrina Powell.